Okay, we are still in Shar Ha'ava. The goal is to try to finish it by the end of the summer. Maybe that would be nice. But we're in the middle of this long paragraph of Umahi Ha'ava, where he was describing this sort of friction that we have between our neshama and our guf, and each one wanting different things, and how when we start out life, since the neshama is melubeshes beguf, it's clothed by the guf, it doesn't even, and the guf is only interested in indulging itself, the neshama doesn't even realize that it's capable of more, and then as it matures, it tries to achieve higher order things that are of greater sophistication and of greater value ultimately. I think we're up to Ukeshatisrape. Or maybe we got past that, I'm not sure. We'll start from there. Ukeshatisrape ha-nefesh mitachluei ha-guf, when the nefesh becomes healed from the illnesses of the guf, doesn't mean the physical illness, it means the illness of having a guf and of giving into the guf, then the neshama starts to recognize its own power, its own ability. The nefesh is full of love. And love is connected to simcha. And that simcha chases away from a person's heart all the desires for indulgences and pleasures of this world. And that simcha will become so strong in his heart. And all the pleasures that this world has to offer are like nothing. They're zero when compared to the simcha of love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All the things we used to love when we were young and we used to think were so important and were so great and were so awesome, when a person experiences the simcha and the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, those things seem stupid. They seem silly. I don't know if I mentioned to you this year, there was a book that was, there was a lecture that was given called The Last Lecture. It became very, very popular. It became a best-selling book also. You seen it on YouTube, Last Lecture?
Yeah, I think so.
Did I mention it this year? The Last Lecture, essentially, with this professor from in Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon, from Carnegie Mellon University, was given a terminal diagnosis, so he knew he was dying, and he gave this whole lecture about his life and chasing his life's dreams, and everything that he did, and how he went and chased down every last thing, his bucket list, and it was like this super inspiring thing. And he, at the end, he said, and as you may have guessed, I've done all of this to leave a record for my children, to inspire my children. And it was this really inspiring. He died a few months later, and it became, they made a book out of it. It became a best-selling book, and it was got millions of hits on YouTube. And Rabbi Storch told me that he was so inspired by it, he thought it would be nice for Rabbanim to see it, share the inspiration. So he told his rabbi, who was Rav Moshe Weinberger, he told him about, and Rav Weinberger was like, why don't you just describe it to me before I listen for an hour? Like, why don't you just like tell me what? So he started describing how he chased, all of his life's dreams and everything he wanted to do when he was 6 years old and when he was 7 years old. Now as a 42-year-old, he went and he did these things. And Rav Weinberger, just said, it's so sad. He said, yeah, I know, it's sad that he died, that's why it's so sad. No, it's so sad that his dreams when he was 6 years old were the same as his dreams when he was 42 years old. They never developed beyond that point. It's like it totally ruined it for him. now you can't even watch it anymore. It's just like, but if you think about it, that's sad, right? A person is supposed to develop. At a certain point, you stop wanting to, play shortstop for the New York Yankees. Like the most exciting thing in life is not necessarily, or maybe the reality hits that you're not going to play shortstop in the New Yankees right around the time where you realize that you're older than the guys that are playing. So you'll get there soon. But or even like the thrill of walking out. I remember at the Siyum HaShas, the last Siyum HaShas, I brought all my sons. I brought my four sons to the Siyum, and I have a Talmud whose father was running all the communications. He does for all the major events, the Super Bowls and the concerts and whatever. He does. He's good with this stuff. So he does communications, the headsets and things like that. So he told us we can come to one of the suites that he was in. So he said, you just come through the field. He took us through. And the kids were like, whoa, we're on the field in MetLife Stadium. And I was thinking, that is really cool for a kid to be on the field in MetLife Stadium. But, like, I don't know, it didn't feel so cool to me anymore. And, like, good. It shouldn't, right? It shouldn't. At a certain point, a person is supposed to grow out of, like, what we ultimately desire. And what he's really describing is this higher order simcha, that people think that when you get more things, you're going to be more happy. And now, you know, the whole field of positive psychology has proven through decades of research at this point that it's not true, that, you know, achieving your goals doesn't make you happy. What makes you, when you're happy, you tend to achieve a lot more, meaning that essentially what positive psychology did is they flipped the equation, that people always assumed that when you accomplish, you're happy, that successful people are happy because of their success. And what positive psychology realized, and they've done all the research to bear it out, is that it's the opposite, that happy people tend to be successful. Negative people tend not to accomplish as much. But if your definition of happiness is achieving a goal, it likely will never come, because as soon as you achieve the goal, you just move the goalposts, as you should, you know, to try to achieve the next goal. So you're never really there. If you're always chasing things in this world, you know, whether it's honor or whether it's pleasure, you're never actually there. You never have enough money. You're never at the point where you've satisfied everything you ever wanted to do. There's always something else. But if you have sort of this inner happiness, you know, someone who has a sense of simcha, a sense of fulfillment in his life, then the things don't really matter nearly as much. Vizu Yiras Hashem, and this is Yiras Hashem. Not to violate what it says in the Torah. The ha'ava, a parsha coincidence, could go Pinchas, shemasar nafsho b'shvil abor yisbarach. Someone like Pinchas, who really did something very, very risky at the end of this week's parsha, he was mosar nefesh because he couldn't bear what he was watching, and he realized that someone has to take a stand. And in fact, he didn't go right away. Rashi tells us that he first approached Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, didn't you teach us Aval Aramis Kanaim Pogimbo that we should do something about this? And Moshe Rabbeinu said that Karyina de Igrasa Ilavi Parvanka, the one who reads the proclamation, he should be the one to carry it out. So you're the one that remembered. You're the one that realized that this is the din, so you should carry it out. Well, what's the svara there? Why should he be, just because he's the one that remembered, shouldn't the leader of the people be the one to do it? But what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling him was, you're the one that's on fire right now. You're the one that's really bothered by this. You're the one that's acting with passion right now. So yes, so that's the one that has to do this. That's the person that has to carry it out, because an act like that, of Mesiras Nefesh, to be successful, has to be carried out with a profound sense of wanting to defend the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what Pinchas was able to express. Every time I see that phrase in Rashi, Karyina de Igrasa Ilavi Parvanka, I'm reminded of this story. Rav Shachter had nothing to do with this, but just because Rav Shachter told us once that one of the Rashi Yeshiva in YU, was the Rashi Yeshiva were making Sheva Brachos for the child of one of the other Rashi Yeshiva who had just gotten married. So they had this big Sheva, and the young couple, as often happens, came very late to the Sheva Brachos, and it was the last night of Sheva Brachos. So they just got there, like, before Shkia, to wash before Shkia. But by the time the Suda was over, by the time it came time for Sheva Brachos, they were past the week of Sheva Brachos. So all the Rosh Yeshiva got into, like, you know, a debate. Like, do we say Sheva Brachos? Do we not say Sheva Brachos? So Rav Shachter identified which Rosh Yeshiva was. It's not nice, I'm not going to say. But he said that one particular Rosh Yeshiva, one of the senior Rosh Yeshiva, said, I remember I saw in a certain Tshuva Sefer, it had this shaila, and it says that you're allowed to say the Sheva Brachos. And Rabbi Lam said, Karyina de Igrasa, you lavi parvanka. You're the one that said it, that said that you saw it. You're saying all seven brachos, because no one else is risking the brachos of Atala. So he said he made that Rashi Yeshiva say all seven brachos, and they all went home and checked in that Sefer, and it said the exact opposite of what that Rashi Yeshiva remembered. So that's the Karyina de Igrasa. So there's also svar in that a person wants to say, I remember, I think it's supposed to be this way. Good, you believe it? So you do it. But in the context of Pinchas, Moshe knew he was right. So he made him do it, not because you believe it, you do it. Moshe also believed it, but you're the one that's really inspired, so you're the one that should go do it. So and Vavram Avinu Shamar and Moshe Yodi El Hashem. Avraham Avinu didn't want to take anything from Melchizedek. Wasn't interested. He helped fight this battle, and he won the battle, but he wasn't interested in taking him. That's what the Chazal say over there. That's why his children were zocha to the chut shel tcheles and the straps of tefillin. Nal is made out of leather, so that's it's because he refused to take anything. So that's the chutva tzroch nal. The Elisha shel aratza lekachas mi Naaman, and Elisha who didn't want to take anything from Naaman. Va'osa at, meaning he's linking a love of Hashem with the ability to say no to gashmias, with the ability to turn down opportunities for more money and for more pleasures in this world, and that's an important ability to have. Not that gashmius is all bad, because there were, you know, you guys were just talking in the car today about you know, how some of the Hasidim are very into like the malchus and the gold and the silver and the shining and, you know, all for the rebbes. So there is this belief that there's a sense of you know, of prestige and honor can be expressed in that way, and there's nothing wrong with certainly nothing wrong with having money. Some of the holy Tanayim were very, very, very rich people. Avraham Avinu was a very, very rich man, but a person always has to have the ability to walk away from it. He always has to have the ability to say no to more, and that's not an easy thing to do. So that's what he's emphasizing. That a person is who has the ability to say no can make a proper balanced decision in terms of, is this worth my time? Is this going to be bittul Torah? You know, it's amazing listening to these shiurim at night, you know, from Rabbi Raz and Rabbi Mandelstam about bittul Torah. It's really shocking almost, even though to us it shouldn't be, what the expectation is, what the halachic expectation is, where the entire discussion, let's say Razor's Chakira last night, the two deos, is it that it's the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is every single second of every single day, but Anas Rachmana Patre, what can you do? You have to sleep a little bit, you have to eat a little bit. Or the more toned down version of it is that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is every single spare moment that you have. It's just that when it's not a spare moment, there's no mitzvah of Talmud Torah. But every spare moment, there's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That's a lot. That's a lot to demand of a person. Bittul Torah is, you know, we're used to thinking, and, you know, sort of the community that we grew up in, that if a person is koveya itin, he learns a little bit every day. So that's a great maila, and that's, you know, that's like the pinnacle. Someone who learns an hour a day, so that's a true ben Torah. Someone who goes to a daf yomi, that's the, but the real demand on us is actually much greater, much more challenging. We can't even fathom like what it means to be a Vilna Gaon, and not in terms of his genius, that also we can't fathom, but like what it means to spend every moment like never burning out. You know how easy it is to burn out when you're in yeshiva for a chorev zman and there's a double adar. Forget it. You know, like once, like in the middle of the first adar hits, like everyone's dropping like flies. You know, you're just looking like where you can go next, bugging out. But like to do like a whole life where our spare moments are used for Torah, not an easy thing to do. A person has to be very separated from ta'anugim. And a person should find the sweetness of Avas Hashem, meaning a person can only do that if he really loves it. A person can only do something so consistently for so long if he genuinely loves it and he's motivated by love. If it's a chore, if it's an avoda, ultimately it's gonna, you just lose the cheshek. You're not gonna be able to keep it going. It can only work if a person really loves it. Someone who serves out of love, is involved in Torah mitzvos and goes in the paths of wisdom, tova, not because there's anything pressuring him to do it, not because he's afraid of some negative consequence, nor to even get a reward for it. He does the truth because it is true. And then ultimately, the good will come out of it. That's it's like the Nefesh HaChaim describes Torah Lishma. Torah Lishma doesn't mean L'shem Hashem. It doesn't mean L'shem, the enjoyment of learning. It doesn't mean. It means Torah L'shem Torah, just because it is Torah and it deserves it deserves our attention. That's Torah Lishma. And then ultimately, all the other good things that we hope for will come out of that. But we're doing it because we know it's right. Umal zu himal gadol ma'od, and that's a very, very great ma'ala. Meaning, what about all the promises of reward? You know, we're told that we're going to get olam haba. We're told in Shema that if we do the will of God, He's going to make it rain, and we're going to have crops, and we're going to have material success. So the Rambam describes. The Rambam writes that mashal ma'adav doma. It's like you wanted to get a child to learn how to read. So how do you get a child to learn how to read? You have to teach him Aleph Beis. Okay, why would he want to sit there learning Aleph Beis? Kamat Aleph, or whatever the newfangled ways of teaching it are. Whatever, Mr. Aleph, I don't know, whatever they have. Why would he want to do that? So what do they do? What do you do with a child? You bribe him, right? You bribe him with rewards, with treats. So as far as the child knows, the reason he's learning Aleph Beis is so that he can get that lollipop. It's all for a lollipop. Now, we're much more sophisticated. We know that he needs to know how to read, because if he's going to do anything in life, it's going to be important for him to know how to read. He has no idea. He doesn't know what it means to work for a living, what it means to go to school and to become educated, what it means to accomplish things. He has no idea that it's so important. But on his level, all he can see is the lollipop. He can't understand the greater good of just the inherent value of knowing how to read. So the Rambam says that's what we are. We have to be told, yeah, you'll have a good crop, and you'll be successful, and you'll be happy, and you'll be this, because that's our lollipop. We're like the child. That's what Hashem has to tell us, because that's what we understand. But that's not really what its value is. Its value is inherent. It's a much greater value than we're able to understand. Not everyone can understand it. The malas Avram Avinu. This is a level of Avram Avinu. Shakara Kosh Baruch Hu Ohavi. Lefi Shelo Aved El Me'ava. Hashem was his beloved because he served out of Ava. The malas Shetzivanu Ba'Kosh Baruch Hu Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is what Hashem commanded us through Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Hashalom. Shenemar Vahavtas Hashem Elokecha B'chol Levavcha U'V'chol Nafshecha U'V'chol Ma'odecha. When a person develops the proper level of Ava for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, miyad yaseh kol ha-mitzvos me'ava. So then he'll find so much more meaning in his mitzvos. His mitzvos will be with a renewed energy. His mitzvos will be with a spring in his step. He's going to do it with out of love, and that's going to be a much more fulfilling experience in Kiyum HaMitzvos. Okay.